Thank you for joining our podcast with industry icons. These are great conversations. And I must confess, I am absolutely thrilled to have Larry Katzenstein with us. Larry is an amazing attorney. He is someone that I honestly, truly respect his professionalism, his insight, and his knowledge. Larry graduated from Washington University with an ABA, with an AB, and then Harvard Law School with a law degree in 1972. And I wish I had time to list all the accolades, but Larry is truly an expert. We don't have many experts in this world, but I honestly look up to Larry as one of those individuals. And he has vast knowledge. Not only is he knowledgeable, but he also has tremendous wisdom. And so, Larry, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Thanks for those kind words. I really hardly recognize myself from
Well, a quick story. There's Larry and I, guess, first met, what, 3 or 4 years ago?
We were both speaking at
ACJA conference. And we were just chatting, and come to find out, we lived in the same town growing up, and his father was my family's physician and delivered my two sisters. And so we've had a connection there, and plus just the St. Louis area. So, Larry, let me begin by asking, what have you learned in your career that would be helpful to those who are just beginning their career or seasoned professionals?
Yeah, I've had a lot of years now to observe plan giving programs and which ones are successful and what are the things that make them successful. And I think the first and most important thing that I've learned is that what it really takes is patience in developing long-term friendships with donors. People give money to people they like, and really successful programs are the ones that are really good at developing those friendships. I know some charities, for example, will travel around the country and visit with a donor 2 or 3 times without even asking for a gift, just to keep in touch and tell them what's going on at the institution and thank them for their previous gifts. And it also, because of that, requires a lot of patience. It really is a long timeline often to develop those friendships with donors. But I think that's what it really takes to develop a successful plan giving program, which means that the people doing the visiting have to have the right kinds of patient warm personalities to be able to develop those friendships and get to know donors well, hear about their families, see pictures of their grandchildren, that sort of thing. But that's really what it takes. That's what's so difficult now when it's so hard to travel. But I think that will change soon, I hope.
I do too. You know, I really appreciate you mentioning the importance of developing relationships. I believe that is the one key to success. I don't believe you'll ever be successful by just having acquaintances. They've got to know you, and you've got to know them. And there has to be that relationship, because relationships are on which trust is based.
And it absolutely is.
Has to come down to trust. What else have you learned in your career?
Well, the other thing that I've learned, which takes some learning sometimes for people who do plan giving, is that you need to be selling the institution, not the technique. You know, we get so enamored of all of the tools we have that we tell donors about, but you're not selling a charitable remainder trust, you're selling the institution. And so I think concentrating on that rather than showing them why a charitable remainder trust is so great, or some other technique, a gift annuity is so great, is better. You know, one charity's gift annuity is no better than any other charity's gift annuity. And
exactly,
so you may interest the donor in charitable gift annuity, but they may decide to do it someplace else. So those really have to be second.
You know, I'll give you a real quick story, Larry. At one time I had just gotten Crescendo. This is back in the early to mid 80s when it was brand new. And I was showing a donor 80 pages on a charitable remainder trust. And he looked pensive and puzzled. And I asked, you had any questions? He said, Eddie, all you care about is my money. And he was right. And it changed my career. I mean, it helped me understand exactly what you're saying. People fall in love with the organization and its mission. And then there's the opportunity. And I tended early on, Larry, to get too technical. And I
Yeah,
think
I
you're
think that's
exactly
a common
right.
problem. No, I think that's a common problem. No, you have to always keep the focus on the institution. As I say, you know, every charity can offer you a charitable major trust or a gift annuity, but Harvard's gift annuity is no different than Yale's gift annuity.
That's exactly right.
So,
what other comments would you make to help people as they really want to advance not just their career but their success in gift planning?
Yeah, another thing I would put in that list would be, you know, often the lifeblood of planned giving programs is bequests, and often that's the first thing that donors offer is to put a bequest in their will. And I think that is a good place to start, because then you can go back to the donor later and thank them for their bequest intention, but show them why, if they just did this during lifetime through a charitable major trust, it would be better for them. You're helping them improve their bequest, because now they get an income tax deduction. Now they can often increase their income, because maybe before they had some stock paying a 1% dividend, they can sell it tax-free in a charitable major trust and increase their income. And so starting with the bequest and then showing them gradually why a charitable major trust, for example, might be better for the donor's standpoint than the bequest. And of course, it also makes it irrevocable for the charity. So that's good for the charity too.
Exactly. You know, and also there's a theory that I've used for years, Larry, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is an opportunity to go ahead and gift while you're alive. And some of those resources might be used. I mean, like a charitable gift annuity, they could use some of the resources, but it's kind of like giving money to our heirs early to see what they do with it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And one of my favorite examples from my history that has always stuck with me is I had a client years ago who had a bequest in her will to the Missouri Botanical Garden, which is a world famous garden here.
Mm-hmm.
And one time we were meeting and I said, why don't you give him the money now? You're way up in your 80s, don't need, you can afford it. And she had never thought about just making some of those bequests lifetime gifts. And it gave her so much pleasure to see that garden built during her lifetime. And, you know, you get the rewards for the lifetime gift you just don't get with the bequest. And she was so grateful that I had mentioned it to her, and she took her friends to the garden the rest of her life. It was very rewarding for her.
You know, Larry, that raises a question I hadn't planned to ask you. I hope that's okay. In talking to this audience, most of who are planned giving specialists or major gift asset fundraisers, what should be their relationship with professional advisors? I mean, I'm sure it would intimidate some folks in St. Louis to come to you as a planned giving officer at some college or something. But what advice would you give our professionals, development professionals, in working with advisors?
Well, I think it depends. Are you talking about advisors to the donor or advisors to the planned giving program?
To the donor.
Yeah, well, they have to be part of the process because, planned giving people can't be giving legal advice to their donors. They have a conflict of interest, obviously.
Correct.
And so, and if the donor's lawyer is involved early in the process, then they'll feel they're part of the team, and that helps a lot. When I am asked to go meet with a donor with the planned giving person, I always want to have their lawyer there if possible, so that they can, again, be part of the process. And whenever we draft documents, they're not to be signed by the donor. They're for the donor to take to the donor's lawyer and review from the donor's standpoint. So I think that they just have to be part of the process, too. You know, if they feel left out later, they may be the ones who say, this doesn't make sense for you, and so forth.
Right, right. You know, and I really appreciate that comment, because I think it's absolutely true. And I would suggest that most attorneys want you to be successful as an organization, too. They're your friend. They're your advocate. And they're the ones who are basically going to draft whatever documents are included. And,
well,
and they're
right.
The advisor. They're the advisor. And, you know, we tell our planning clients that if we basically what we are is educators, and then they go back to their advisors to review what we've suggested and then let them execute it. The sooner you can engage the advisor, whether it's an investment advisor, trust officer, but especially their attorney or accountant, the more successful you'll be.
Not only more successful, but especially with larger gifts, it's protection against will contests. You know, often when someone, especially someone without children, has a large bequest of an estate to charity, second and third cousins suddenly appear. And
yes.
The best way to avoid those undue influence kinds of situations to make sure that the donor's counsel was always involved in the process, and so that no argument can be made that they weren't advised that they were subject to undue influence.
You know, I this probably shouldn't have to be said, but I want to say it, is I know of a university that actually drafts wills and trusts for their donors at no charge. And I would encourage every not-for-profit to avoid that process.
I think that's right. I don't have a problem with a charity providing charitable remainder trust forms, which
nope.
I usually prepare for them, but they always are forms that they take to the lawyer, and we would never draft a revocable trust or a will for a charity's donor. I think standard documents like revocable trusts, which are pretty standardized,
yep.
would be fine,
yep.
as long
I
as they're encouraged to take it to their lawyer and do that.
You know,
I would add a couple other things. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would just add a couple other things on my list of things that charities can keep reminding themselves of. One is to beware of unusual gifts, especially from donors that they've never heard of before. You know, the donor who has real estate that they can't get rid of, and there must be some reason.
Yes.
They have no long-term relationship with the charity. Or the boat. You see a lot of boats. So beware of those kinds of gifts would be another thing I would say to be very careful of.
Yes. I can think of several horror stories I've heard over the years. Fortunately, I've not been involved in one. Well, we're going to run out of time here in just a minute. Larry, I want to ask you, what has been the single most important lesson you've learned in your career?
I guess to be a listener, try to understand what motivates people. And that's something that lawyers are often not very good at, being
yeah.
good listeners. But it's so important for people involved in plan giving. Listen to the donors. See if you can understand what really motivates them, what really is behind their charitable intentions. So you can understand why they want to do what they do. I think that's really important for everybody, but especially for people in plan giving and for lawyers generally.
You know, this has been an interesting conversation, Larry. Larry's taught at the Notre Dame Tax Institute, the University of Miami Heckerling and Estate Planning Institute, and Southern Florida Tax Institute. Larry is truly an expert, but what I hope you heard on the call today was that the advice he gave was not technical, it was practical. It is incredibly wise. The information he has shared is incredibly wise. Larry, I can't thank you enough for doing this today. I know you're busy, an incredibly successful attorney in St. Louis, but speaks all over the country. And Larry, I really not only respect you, but I really appreciate your being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you. My pleasure. I'm happy to do it.
Well, everybody, thank you for joining us on this podcast with Conversations with Industry Icons. We've had Larry Katzenstein today out of St. Louis. He is an attorney with Thompson & Coburn in St. Louis and a tremendous gentleman. I think that's how I would end this discussion and description of him. Larry is a gentleman. So thank you all for joining us.
Thanks very much.